Hello, and welcome to Teacher People, the podcast that helps you know your teachers as people. I'm your host, Mr. John Zania, and I am delighted to have our guest for episode 2 with me here, Miss Laura Narr. Miss Narr, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Zania.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you here. I feel like you're one of the few teachers in Chelsea High School who just goes by that single moniker, that one-word name. Everybody knows who it is when you hear Narr.
Yeah.
Do students ever call you Miss Narr, Mrs. Narr? Like, that comes out in class? Is that an awkward moment?
Kind of, yes. And also, Mr. Kapolka calls me Mrs. Narr. Mm-hmm. And that's about it, really. Yeah.
Okay, you don't go over, it's not like a class policy on the first day of class, call me Narr.
No, oh no.
That could be like the title of your autobiography someday.
Call me Narr.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's really nice to have you up here. We're recording this in my English classroom in the high school in the English wing. And you teaching in the art room, like, we don't get you up here
Never.
All that often. And I feel like you may as well be teaching in Siberia some days. And it feels probably really far. But in reality, I think that what you and I do are really more similar than people think. I like to think of myself as an art teacher as well, because we talk about language arts. Language is an art form, and you teach art as well. So what if we flip-flopped the roles and you were an English teacher? How do you think that would go? Like, were you a good English student? Did you like reading? Like, even today, is language and literature still a part of your life?
So it's funny that you asked me that question, because in high school, I was not a high achiever, I would say. I would totally say, and no one that knows me would ever say I was. Mm-hmm. But art and my English classes were the ones that I did well in. I always got A's in English. And if I didn't, I was going to work harder to make it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because there's so much room for creativity, and it's not so black and white. Mm-hmm. So I don't work well in math because there's a right or a wrong answer. Mm-hmm. There's an answer as long as you can justify it. Mm-hmm. And what did you intend to show? Mm-hmm. And I can write for hours. I love it. I still journal. I still write. I used to love to write poetry. Mm. Love to write poetry. And I think that I'd be a good English teacher, and the fact that I love it, and I do love to read, but I don't think I could handle how long it takes to really comb through people's papers, mm-hmm. and to know how much effort they put into it. And then you have to say, well, you did this wrong. I mean, those were mm-hmm. masterpieces, and it took so long. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take hours. So I don't know if I could. Plus, if you know me, Power School and I are not super good friends. Mm-hmm. So I would not be good at that.
Well, we know that you aren't ultimately an English teacher. Obviously, you're teaching art and you're very good at it. And many of our students love taking art classes with you. So for people that maybe don't know about your background, how did you end up, first of all, focusing on art? And secondly, at Chelsea High School?
Oh, man. This is a long podcast, I hope. Okay, so I came to art. I was always really good at art. But I didn't really think it was something I could ever make a career. So I was actually a construction management major, and I did consortium home building my senior year. I worked for my aunt and uncle's maintenance company, so like my 16th birthday, I got a tool belt. You know, like, I love to work with my hands and to build. And so I ended up going into construction management, and I worked for a construction company for years. And I took an art class to fulfill a fine arts credit at Washtenaw. I was at Washtenaw. And the instructor was basically like, no, you need to go to art. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I'm going to do this. And she's like, no, you're not. You're going to change. And then I kind of had an existential crisis and took a year off, and then decided that I wanted to be an art teacher. So it was kind of cool. Yeah,
I think that was like the Seinfeld yada, yada, yada. You just moved over a really interesting year of your life in a couple of words.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a great year. Hmm. That was 1998. I turned 21 and I moved to Hawaii for a year. Just my best friend and I. And we just kind of got up and went. And that was, you know, before the internet. Mm-hmm. So we didn't really have a place to live. We had kind of found a place from a travel book. But so we called and made a reservation for like a night. Ended up staying a year.
Wow. What island were you on?
We were on Oahu.
Okay.
But we went to the other islands. It's just there was more jobs.
So what kind of Hawaii experience did you have? Were you like a beach and snorkeling every day sort of person?
Yes.
Were you like working in a desk job? It just happens to be in Hawaii. Like,
oh, God. I would never have made it out alive. No, we surfed, and which I'm still not a great surfer. But we snorkeled, we swam with sea turtles. We were at the beach every single day. And then I waited tables at night at Planet Hollywood, which was then cool. Mm-hmm. Now nobody even knows what it is. Mm-hmm. But then it was pretty cool. So that's what we did. It was a blast.
Yeah.
Just took a year off and just focused on me.
And why did you come back?
So I'd gotten to the point where I was like ready to do something with my life, right? Something more. Not that waiting tables wasn't a thing, but I knew I couldn't go back to school there. I just knew I had like more of a purpose, something else I was supposed to do. And so I this is going to sound crazy, but this is just how I roll. Okay. So I said to myself, self, you're going to wake up tomorrow and you're going to know what you want to do with the rest of your life. And so I went to bed and I had a dream about my elementary school art teacher, Mr. Helfer, who was like my favorite person in the world. And the next morning I woke up and I said, I'm going to be an art teacher. And I called Eastern and I got everything transferred over the phone, signed up for classes that day, done.
Wow.
And then I flew home 2 weeks later and started at Eastern.
Seems like it's meant to be in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The universe gives you a sign. You got to take it.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
What about then from Eastern to Chelsea High School? What did that path look like? Did you teach in other districts? Did you ever think about anything other than education?
There was a minute, but I started in Detroit. So I got really into the idea of teaching in the inner city because I wanted to help. I wanted to go help, and I had learned a lot about the injustices and how schools are funded and what have you, and I was very passionate about it. So my first job was in Detroit, and it was a challenge, especially when you're fresh out of school. You get beat up anyway, but then, you know, this was a tougher group of kids, but they were hilarious. And I loved it so much that I moved to Chicago and I started teaching on the South Side of Chicago for 2 years. And I loved that as well. And I went to graduate school when I was there and got my master's in education. And then I got a job teaching on the North Shore in a really cool district in Skokie, Illinois, which was so fun because there was kids from countries I had never even heard of. I learned so much about the world. And then when I had my first daughter, we decided to move home because it was just Chicago. My husband and I were both teachers. He finished up school there and it was just really expensive to have a baby and we didn't have any family out there. So we moved back to Michigan. He got a job teaching at Skyline High School. I started teaching at Honey Creek Elementary, which is funny because there's a bunch of kids here that were my students there. And then I taught Grosse Pointe and then I came to Chelsea High School.
I feel like that's a really interesting list. And it's like one of these is not like the other. Detroit, Chicago, Chelsea.
Yes. It was a big, big change. Mm-hmm. Big change. And especially moving, because I grew up in Ann Arbor, so even moving to Chelsea is different. Mm-hmm. It's different living here.
And do your students know this story? Like, did you just retell something that everybody's heard a million times? Or do you think, like,
I'm sure half the kids know parts of that story. I mean, I'm pretty much an open book. You can ask me anything and I'll tell you. And I do drop little stories quite often just because, like, I don't know, my journey to get to where I am had a lot of twists and turns and everyone today is so focused on this is what I'm going to do. This is my life. And they have this track and it's like, or take the road less traveled or just, you know, you think you're going left, go right. Why not?
Well, moving us along in the podcast, I know we could talk for hours about this stuff, but to get our podcast moving along, we have a structure for the podcast where every week I ask my guests to bring to the table the same things that I present to my students at the beginning of ours based on the day of the week. So we have a musician on Monday, a trailer for a TV show or movie on Tuesdays, a current event or something going on in the world on Wednesdays, a throwback story from the past on Thursdays, and then a question of the day. And I've invited Nar to do the same thing here today, and why don't we start off by having you tell us a little bit about the song that you've chosen for us today.
Oh, okay, so I'm going to give you a backstory really quick, and that is every year there's kind of like a album or something that comes out that's kind of like, okay, this is my theme for the year. This is how we go. Like, one year it was Taylor Swift. One year it was Hozier. One year it was JT when he came out, right? So it's just kind of an album, and you never know until it hits you. Well, it hit me this summer, and it was Lizzo. And I am a super fan of Lizzo. And I have been way back when she came out with her first couple pieces, right? And she's worked with Prince. She's amazing. And I love her. And my song off her album, even though I love almost every single one, is My Own Soulmate. And I just am obsessed with that song.
What do you like about that one? Well, we'll talk a little bit more about it after the song, but anything just in general that you think grabbed you the first time you heard it?
Yeah, it's called I'm Gonna Do Me. Mm-hmm. I'm Gonna Do Me, You Do You, and Stay Out of My Way. Because I don't need you. I've got it all right here. And I think that's what you just put your hand up in the air and you're like, amen. Love it.
All right. So here we go. This is Lizzo, My Own Soulmate.
True story. No glory. Let's go. Yeah, the old me used to love a Gemini. Like a more serious than with him every night. A lot of two-faced people show me both sides. So I figured out I gotta be my own type. They used to say to get a man, you had to know how to look. They used to say to keep a man, you had to know how to cook. But I'm solo and soho, sipping soju in Malibu. It's not me, myself, kinda attitude. Marry me one day. True love ain't something you can buy yourself. True love finally happens when you buy yourself. So if you buy yourself, then go and buy yourself another round from the bottle on the higher shelf.
And that was Lizzo, My Own Soulmate. I'm curious to hear, you play music in your art classes, don't you, often while students are working? Is Lizzo like frequent up there on the list of what we're listening to?
Well, not this album, because even the clean versions aren't that clean. Mm-hmm. But Good as Hell, which is one of her older songs, which is one of my favorites, which is when I first became a Lizzo fan years ago. I would play that all the time. Mm-hmm. And I just tell the kids, earmuffs, even though I don't think they buy it.
Well, I was going to ask that question that, to me, this is probably a product of knowing you from afar a bit and only knowing you like mostly secondhand through students or from across a staff meeting or something like that. But you strike me just at first as a person who's maybe not the loudest voice in the room or someone who can be kind of... I don't know that introverted is the right word, but like, I don't know that you're running around telling people to listen to you all the time or like spilling your guts out to people. But this is a very like outward song with the beat and the volume and like even just the message that it's proclaiming. So do you feel like that tension too? Like is this song a release for like a side of you that maybe doesn't get to come out as often or?
Well, and I would say you are totally right, by the way. I am introverted. I very much so. When I'm done with the day, I go home and I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. Or like if plans get canceled, I'm totally happy with that. Like I just stay on my couch. Mm-hmm. But when I'm somewhere, I will give it my all. I am not the person that's going to stand up and say anything in the staff meeting or what have you. I like to just keep to myself, but I'll talk to my kids a lot. Mm-hmm. Like my kids, I'm pretty open with my students. Mm-hmm. I think that this song is maybe more personal. I think as a woman, we all have our own, insecurities about ourselves just growing up. It's just something I'd love to say. I'd love to just blame it on the media or just blame it on magazines or whatever, but we all kind of have our own little demons that we battle with, and we kind of tell ourselves we aren't good enough, we aren't strong enough, we aren't pretty enough, we're not perfect enough, and that sometimes we need somebody else or we need someone to tell us that we're good in order to feel good. And this song is just kind of like, nope, I got it. Mm-hmm. I trust myself. And I do think, I do have a lot of confidence, right, outwardly. And I do trust myself. Like, if I say I'm going to move to Hawaii, I'm going to move to Hawaii. If I say I'm going to move to Chicago later, y'all, I'm gone. Mm-hmm. If I say I'm going to quit my job, I'm going to quit my job. And I'm not going to worry about what happens afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I love this because you got everything you need. You just have to trust yourself. Mm-hmm. You just have to love you first. And I'm a woman in my 40s. I am married to a wonderful man. I have two gorgeous daughters. And I don't want them for one second to think that they're not perfect just the way you are. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
That's an awesome philosophy. And I think totally healthy. And I think something probably would be great if more people could settle into or feel comfortable with. I'm curious for you, like, do you feel like that's something that you arrived at after a great deal of work, or like you had to evolve to that understanding? Or do you think you've just always been good at being comfortable in your own skin and feeling, you know, kind of good about who you are? Have you always been able to tune out those voices that maybe come from the media or
absolutely
the outside?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm a pretty sensitive person in general. I think that's why maybe I do relate to kids well. I had no confidence growing up. None. I didn't want to be different. I didn't want to be the same. It's like you want to be different, but you don't want to stand out. You know, this whole thing. I didn't love the way I looked. I compared myself to other people. I never really, believed in myself. And honestly, that trip to Hawaii was the turning point for me, mm-hmm. because I was dropped off in the middle of the ocean with a suitcase. Mm-hmm. I figured it out. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was like, no, I got this. I'm pretty good. But I think the rest of it, you know, everybody struggles with certain things. But it's when you, like, I think I've gotten to the point where I like my flaws. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And they actually kind of work. Mm-hmm. I'll take them.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you talk about that travel as an opener for you, something that really helped you see more about yourself or learn different things and how to respect aspects of yourself. I know for me, I have that same experience. I can think of two or three trips of like when I lived for a summer in Portland, Oregon, or when I did a road trip and lived out of my car for 3 weeks through the Great Plains, which probably sounds like the worst possible road trip a person could go on. But those are really the moments that I look back and say, yeah, this is the moment I became more comfortable with myself and realized that just I was enough, kind of like I think the songwriter's saying here.
Well, and in that sense with the travel, I mean, I think it's that adage of you got to get lost to get found. Mm-hmm. And that's always been me. Mm-hmm. I have to make all the mistakes myself, mm-hmm. and figure out by process of elimination, mm-hmm. yeah. the right things. But knowing I'll finally get there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love this song. I love it because it's, she says it out loud. You can dance to it, which mm-hmm. who doesn't? Mm-hmm. Feel good when they dance. I don't know. Are you a dancer, Mr. Zanio?
Not really.
No, okay. But, okay.
Yes.
More of like a head nodder.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. Got it. Okay.
I'm dancing on the inside. But yeah, in fact, I had not heard this song. This is not on my playlist recently until you sent it to me the other day. And one of the things that stood out to me was kind of the other side. I think you talk a little bit about the insecurity that we're battling and these mm-hmm. demons that we're trying to ward off. But I actually like the part of the song that talks about the celebrating once you've gotten to that point of who you are, and taking time to do little things that you enjoy and like enjoy the small aspects of life. And that really resonated with me. And I was curious to know how you celebrate yourself. Like, I think she's got a line of like, I'm going to order fries at the drive-thru, or I'm going to like grab a little extra special something off of the shelf and make sure that it's high quality. Like, do you have a little way that, whether it's like a treat that you give yourself sometimes, or a little activity you allow when you're rewarding yourself, that how do you celebrate being yourself?
Oh, well, I do dance a lot. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I will turn on a song and I will just let it go in my kitchen. Don't care who sees me. Half the time my girls join in. My husband will walk by with an eye roll, which means that I'm going to go force him to just stand there and head nod while I dance around him. But I also, like, I'll give myself a good cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy a good cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite. Or I'll just sit on my back deck and just pray no one comes out and just take a moment. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like this year, I bought myself a nice, expensive pair of jeans, and it's, like, amazing. Mm-hmm. I just love it. Oh, and I paid for Apple Music and little things that I usually don't do. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm taking care of me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I am so much nicer to everybody else, and even my family. Like, mm-hmm. I am so much better this year about turning things around. Like, if someone's grumping in my house or whatever, just being like, all right, well, you go sit over there and you do that, but I'll be dancing over here if you want to join in. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they always join in.
Mm-hmm. Well, for our second segment of Teacher People today, Ms. Narr has prepared a trailer for us of a TV show or a movie that, for some reason, strikes a chord with you, and I'll let you set it up for us. What will we be hearing about today?
We are going to be hearing about Queer Eye, the new version of the show from years ago, and it's five guys who do makeovers for people who need it. And it's very uplifting and very beautiful.
And this is the fourth season, I think, that they're getting ready to release. Like, it's moved over to Netflix, I think.
Yeah. So I think they finished the fourth season is out. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And have you been a fan of the show for a long time, or is this something you've come to recently?
So, Mr. Zanny, you should know that this summer was my summer of love. I just fell in love with so many things this summer. I think last year I just kind of, like I said, it was a little foggy last year, and this summer I just let myself fall in love with all kinds of stuff. With Lizzo, with these jeans that I bought, with this new pair of shoes I bought, with Queer Eye. Like, I just have fallen so passionately in love with things. And so this one, I just have always loved it.
Okay, well, without further ado, here is our trailer for Queer Eye.
Formerly of Quincy Senior High School, wishing you a gorgeous day.
Are you guys ready to learn about who we're helping tonight?
Yeah! Kathy was my orchestra teacher.
She's so dedicated that she puts herself in the back burner.
I've never had a conversation with a gay person before.
Oh.
We'll see how it goes.
What he's doing for his community is incredible.
She's been wearing the same makeup and hairstyle since the 90s.
Jeez, honey.
I'm ready to let go of my old life and grow into my new.
Try not to cry. Try not to lose it.
Welcome home.
Oh, my God.
I want to be strong.
You look like a brand new man.
People should always remember, it's never too late to start over.
You're stable, you're loving, you took care of your parents. Don't compare yourself to them. You are not a failure.
You have literally saved people's lives, mine included.
All any of us have done, we've highlighted the best parts of you.
You're a warrior. You have people who look up to you, and there are people that you could look up to.
Being able to let you guys in has just transformed me, and I love you guys, man.
All right, so that was our trailer for Queer Eye Season 4 coming up on Netflix, and it sounds to me like this is kind of a reality TV show, but kind of not. Like, is that the right idea? Like, we're dealing with real people going through a real makeover, but...
Yes, but it's like a whole life makeover, mm-hmm. right? So it's usually someone that has kind of stopped taking care of themselves or doesn't really know how to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And then these five gay men come in, and they kind of go over all aspects, like... From grooming to, you know, like, what's going on in your life that you're feeling like this and that you're not taking care of yourself? And what can you do to kind of get out of your shell and make your life better? Mm-hmm. And it just, I cry every single episode. Mm-hmm. Because I just love seeing people feel happier. Mm-hmm. It just makes me feel good.
And you said you're, like, somewhat of a newcomer to this. So, like, maybe you binge-watched this over the summertime.
Yes,
or like...
and I haven't even watched all the episodes. Mm-hmm. But I just, because I never have time to watch TV. But I just love them. And I love each of the men that are in there that are part of the Fab Five. They just each have these beautiful hearts and these beautiful personalities, and they care so much. And like I was telling you before, the season is in Missouri, and they're going to a lot of parts that, you know, the people there have never met a gay person ever, and they're welcoming them into their homes, and they're changing the way that they think, and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Do you have, of the Fab Five, a favorite?
Yes.
Okay.
Who? Jonathan Van Ness.
Okay.
Who is the one with the long hair and the handlebar mustache, and I love him.
What do you like about him?
He just is hilarious, and he is unapologetically himself. Mm-hmm. And kind of like Lizzo and her own soulmate, I like people that are just who they are, and they don't apologize for it. And I love it.
What about a favorite episode or a moment? Like, is there, you say you cry at all of them, but is there one that stands with you, stands the test of time?
I mean, the one that's funny that's in that trailer was a really good one. She was a high school band teacher, and she just, like, lived there. She had, like, a cot, and she just lived there, and she just gave all her time to the kids. And so they came back and did all this really cool stuff for her, and so that was beautiful. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think that one hits me because it was the first one I watched. They've all been mm-hmm. amazing. I like it when they go into the ones that are like the ranch hand or the cattle farmer who's just like not quite sure what to deal with these five men, mm-hmm. right? And so those are really powerful because you hear them talking at the end saying, I didn't know that I could love people like this, especially that I didn't know or that were different than I am. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of, you know, it's what I would love the country to be.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, could you join the cast as a sixth member of the crew? Like, would you be good at that?
I just want to be their backup dancer. I mean, really, I could just be like their chapstick holder, mm-hmm. something, maybe water girl. Yes, I would totally, if I could do that for my life, mm-hmm. yes, to help use your gift to help and make others feel good. It's the best.
What about, would you be on the show from the other end? Like, would you like to invite these people into your life to give you pointers or tips on things you could improve?
Yes, mm-hmm. of course. I mean, I don't think I'm as needy as some, right? Mm-hmm. But my kids are always like, Mom, we need to call Queer Eye, and they mm-hmm. need to come fix our house. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you talking about? I think I did a pretty good job. Decorating, but they're not.
Well, you've got the new jeans. Like, that's got to be a step in the right direction.
I know, right? And let me tell you, those jeans took a solid hour to pick out. I really took my time. It's a big deal.
So where, do you mind my asking? This might be like a really personal question, but where did you get your jeans?
I will tell you. And just so you know, I'm not a brand loyal person. I drive a 20-year-old Honda Accord mm-hmm. that's falling apart. So labels mean nothing to me. I don't care what's on your shirt, what kind of glasses you have. Mm-hmm. It doesn't impress me. However, these are Madewell jeans, and I'm just, as a 42-year-old woman, it's hard to find jeans. Mm-hmm. I've had babies. Things are in weird places now, and it puts them all back together.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have worked a couple extra photo shoots on the side to pay mm-hmm. for a few pairs of Madewell jeans.
Okay.
And I don't feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. It's my top shelf.
I feel like I stumbled upon, because I do not like buying jeans. Like, I consider jeans like a once-in-a-decade investment that I'm set for 10 years once I find a pair. So just a few years ago, I was coming up on like year 9 or 10 of my previous pair, and it was clear like I needed a new pair.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up in Montreal at this shop called Jeans that we had read on the internet is like the place to go for jeans in Eastern Canada. And it turns out that it was absolutely right, that it was just wall-to-wall jeans of every sort of imaginable brand you could think of. And they are like expert jeans salespeople that you tell them what you want, what kind of color, what kind of fit. They send like these people to fetch pairs of jeans, and they're throwing them over the changing room curtain for you to try on. And then
awesome.
I'll remember always for my life coming out with this one pair that was a great pair of Mavi jeans, which are made in Turkey.
Oh.
And everything about them was perfect, except for they were a little bit long. I said to the guy, like, don't you think that these are a little bit long? Would I need to get these hemmed? And he knelt down on one knee as if to propose or something like that. He grabs my cuff and just in a quarter of a second flicks his hands and he stands up. And I said, like, yeah, that looks like a much better length. Like, should I pin them? Or, and he said, they already are. And I looked down, and in that quarter of a second, he had rolled the cuff, put all the pins in them to be tailored, and they did on-site tailoring while you waited. They would sew our
hem. You are kidding.
New end of the jeans for you, and you walk out with a perfectly tailored pair of jeans. It's called Jeans, Jeans, Jeans.
Jeans, Jeans, Jeans. Okay, but Montreal. How many pairs did you get?
I got one pair.
You went to Jeans, Jeans, Jeans and came out with one pair? Yes,
so I'm set for the next decade with my one pair, and now I have to work really hard to make sure like my weight doesn't fluctuate or I don't get any taller or shorter.
Now, because, welcome to the woman's world, because this is what we deal with. I was going to say, one pair of jeans are 10. There's no way. It depends on the year, and I'm uptown or downtown. That's right. Hilarious.
So, okay, well, to bring us back to our trailer here, there's definitely an era, certainly in our lifetimes, maybe even in our students' lifetimes, where like a show like this would not have been on TV.
No.
It just would not have flown for a number of reasons. And the fact that it's on TV today probably says a lot. And I just wonder, maybe for you, like, why do you think a show like this is important today? And what do you think it is about our world today that allows a show like this to succeed, whereas 10 or 20 or 30 years ago it might not have?
I think that, yes, this is very important for today. And thank goodness, I do think that the world is becoming more accepting. I mean, sometimes it's slow, but they're getting there. And I think this is just a beautiful show that shows it's the character of your heart. It's how much you care. And it's your goodwill towards others. It's not who you choose to love or how you choose to love, because that's personal. These five men are going out there, and I know they're getting paid, it's a show, but you can tell, like, they care and they want these people to do well. And they're not asking for anything in return. I mean, maybe ratings. Okay, I can see that. But I honestly, truly believe that they are just doing it from the goodness of their heart. And so I don't care what they do when they leave. I don't care. Mm-hmm. They're good people, mm-hmm. and everyone should be accepted.
Well, moving on, we are at the halfway point of the podcast here, where we're going to talk about our Wednesday world. That's our current event, and there's obviously a ton of stuff going on in the world that we could talk about, and I wanted to invite you to share one of those things.
Thank you. So I think the one that's kind of affecting me a lot lately is the college admissions scandal. I'm very affected by it because I get it. Does that make sense? Everyone is really like, oh, these people are awful and they're cheating and they're paying. And yeah, they are. But I get why. I know that sounds weird, right? But I'm not sympathizing, but I get it. They're trying to do the best for their kids. They're getting caught up in the pressure. Mm-hmm. It's not right. And I'm very irritated about it, but I get it just the same as parents, even and kids in this school, pressure, want the best for their kids, really work hard to make it perfect for their kids. Mm-hmm. The difference is they just don't have millions of dollars behind them. Mm-hmm. But I can't tell you that if they did, they wouldn't do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you just said made me think of a quote I heard one time that really resonated that said, "We judge ourselves by intent and others by action." And it's kind of like if we were in that situation and we got caught, we'd understand that we only meant the best for people we love and that we were trying to make sure that they were provided for and taken care of. But it's also very easy from the outside to look at the action and just judge that as corrupt or wrong.
Right.
So it's interesting to hear you say that you in some ways can empathize with them or understand where they're coming from. And for people that don't know about the story, essentially we had this handful, it was a few dozen parents, mm-hmm. right, that were caught by the FBI, I think,
mm-hmm.
paying colleges to admit their children to these elite schools or paying coaches to recruit their children for sports yeah. that they didn't even play,
mm-hmm.
With some really creative like photoshopping of heads yeah. onto
it wasn't even good photoshopping
and stuff like that.
We definitely could have done better in my room.
And just maybe saying. like maybe you should open a business here, now that we know there's a market for it. But so essentially, yeah, all these finally the punishments are coming down for these people, mm-hmm. and some of them are being sentenced to like a handful of days in prison, and others are paying these fines. And so it's really opened up this question about college admissions and are they fair, and is this just more evidence that it's tilted in the favor mm-hmm. of the wealthy or the elite or the privileged? And so did you walk away from the story like feeling encouraged in any way and discouraged? Like, what was your response to
this? I think I'm more kind of like, I told you so. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I get so frustrated with the pressure and the stress that I see kids in and under today. I've been teaching high school, I think 9 or 10 years. I don't even remember. That's a counting. That's a number.
Mm-hmm.
And I the last couple of years have been more stressful than I've ever seen. And kids are so nervous. I mean, they miss 3 points and they're crying. Mm-hmm. And they're so stressed out. And now I'll never get into college. And what? You know, like, what? It's very, I don't get it because I guess I didn't, when we grew up, it was a very different time. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of that pressure is students put on themselves, but I think it comes from up above. It comes from our society. It comes from high stakes testing. It comes from us telling everyone they should go to college. It comes from everyone thinking that their definition of success has to do with how much money they're going to make. And not everyone, but a good amount. And parents really feeling that if their kids don't go to a certain school, it's going to look bad on them as well. Or they didn't do their parenting job well. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, to see this bubble up to the surface, and I'm not saying that any of those punishments that they got were wrong. Yeah, like totally. They should be punished. They did something wrong. Like, I don't feel bad for them. Mm-hmm. I just feel like we all sit back and we judge, but a lot of people would be doing the same exact thing because they're that scared of their kid getting left behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like we send that same kind of message. And one of the things I always try to impart to my students when they ask for college advice is that you can have an amazing college experience at pretty much any place that you go to. I mean, there may be a few areas where, like, you're clearly mismatched with, you want a big city and you're going to a small town Michigan private school or something like that. But for the most part, it, like, at the end of the day, it's not going to matter a whole lot, like, what the name on the degree is, with maybe just a handful of exceptions. And as long as you're having a good experience that expands your horizons and allows you to meet people and gives you just the basic skills for your job, it ultimately, at the end of the day, is really probably not going to make that big of a difference, right?
No. In colleges, the connections that you make, period. When you get out, you can call on those connections. If you are a hard worker, if you do what you need to do and you are getting out of college what you set forth to get out of college, you'll be fine. It doesn't matter the name on your diploma. But you and I can say that.
Yeah.
And but it doesn't mean they're not gonna believe it.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that interests me about this story is that we hear so much about the parents that were involved in this, but I haven't at least heard much from the kids' perspective of what they wanted, or were they the ones pushing their parents to do the cheating or bribery? Have you heard anything about that?
From what I know, many of the kids didn't know. That was a big part of it, that they tried to keep the kids in the dark. But like one woman, she paid to have the SAT administered at her house, kind of like a take-home exam, because her kid was having his tonsils out and she didn't want to move the surgery. Mm-hmm. So someone actually hand-delivered the SAT, let him take it at home, and then they just changed the answers on the way. I mean, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. So you'd say that the kid didn't know, but like, what kid doesn't know that you can't take the SAT at home?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. And they've got to be quiet because a lot of them are still in school trying to get their degree, and it's got to be awful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Awful. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm reserving judgment on whether or not it's deserved or not, but they try to have a step up, but really they ruin their kids' careers for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. And you think about, like, from the Chelsea High School perspective, like, what message our students should take from a scandal like this. And it seems like it'd be pretty easy to take just the general, almost discouraging message of, wow, the odds are really stacked against you. Look at maybe these people that are in more fortunate situations that ultimately are going to have just more levers to pull and more opportunities to get access to that same thing that you want.
Right.
It could be really discouraging. But it sounds like you're almost asking kids to look at this and not be encouraged by it, but to be just reminded maybe of what the healthier perspective is, and to recognize that at the end of the day, the college admissions shouldn't be the be-all, end-all of their existence or their time in high school, and that we need to almost have a bigger picture and not see the college admission piece as like the end of the world.
Exactly. When I see my students in 10 years at the fair or wherever, I'm not going to say, what college did you go to? I'm not going to ask them. I'm going to say, how are you? What's going on in your life? I don't care what school you went to. This is a big old rat race, and you're just a rat running the same direction as everybody else. And they have more money, and so maybe some of them will get in above you, but you just go where you need to go. Don't look at the label. even though I do when it comes to Madewell jeans. But don't look at the label of the school. Find your fit and just be okay with it. I've got a lot of kids that are like, well, I'm going to go here, but then I'm transferring here right away as soon as I can. Why don't you just go where you're going and feel comfortable and just try to enjoy your college experience as much as you can and not worry about where it's at.
Or even like on top of that, maybe an alternate is that idea of a gap year.
Oh.
How awesome it would be if more of our kids felt that freedom to say, I don't know if I really want to jump right back into more high intensity schooling. I want some time to travel or explore myself or, you know, just maybe do something that's a little different, work for a little while.
Yeah.
That could be a really nice alternative as well.
Both my girls, that's the only thing I'm going to require of them is that they take a gap year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care when, but they have to do it. You know, in Europe, it's so encouraged. Most kids, once they graduate from high school, they take a year and they travel around the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're supposed to do. And they usually have funds set up for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to university because they have time to figure it out, right? Here, we expect kids to know exactly what they want to do
mm-hmm.
when they're 17. And then we make them apply into that college.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they switch... Right? Like if you're going into engineering and you decide to switch, then you lose all those credits and it's stressful and take a year. And if you're someone like me who struggled with confidence, who struggled with knowing what they really wanted to do or what they're passionate about, take time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard when parents don't always love that
mm-hmm.
idea.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you're approved for that idea of taking like your trip to Hawaii or your year there, like how beneficial that
yes.
was. And that's kind of a living example. I know I had a former student, one of the Folly clan, Aiden Folly,
yes.
spent a year out in Italy working,
yeah.
I think, on like in a vineyard and traveling around the country. And
mm-hmm.
he told me a story once of being on a train and there's this beautiful Italian woman sitting across the train from him. And he had been there long enough that he picked up enough Italian that he started a conversation with her in Italian in her own country. And they ended up like striking this kind of chord with each other. And I'm thinking like, you can't tell me that like Econ 101 is more beneficial
no.
to you or is going to have a bigger impact on your life
right.
than like that memory or that experience. It just seems like, yeah, there's a lot more out there other than just the 4-year college route.
There is, and you're going to be working your career the rest of your life. Let me tell you, because all you kids out there, in a couple years or this year or next year, you're going to leave high school, and I'm still here. I'm stuck here forever, man.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I don't love it, but go, take your time, travel, go do what you need to do, and don't stress so much.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're going to move into our fourth segment of our episode, our Throwback Thursday, where the guest gets to share a memory or an experience from her past. And Nara, do you want to tell us a little bit about your Throwback Thursday for today?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about my music career.
Mm.
And this is funny because when I texted or emailed you and said that I was going to talk about my music career, you asked if there was any recordings.
Mm.
No, the only one that knows about my music career is me. So when I was little, I was afraid to talk to men. I don't know why. Somebody scared me at one point, so I would eat like Thanksgiving dinner on the table and just kind of be an odd duck. And I fell in love with the movie Annie, like the original Orphan Annie, and I loved it. And I had a record that on one side was all the songs and on the other side was just the music. So it was like old school karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the red dress and I had a wig and I had a golden retriever that was real. And I wouldn't speak to anyone. And then I'd come out from under the table when they put the music on in my outfit and I would sing Annie.
Mm-hmm.
All day. And then if someone tried to talk to me, I would run away again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would always try out for the talent shows for singing, usually Annie, in elementary school, and I would never be accepted. The only year I made it into the talent show was when I did a lip sync.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what does that tell
it's
you?
It's a hard knock life.
It's a hard knock. Oh my God, that was good. Yes, it was. And so every year from like third or fourth grade on, I would make my parents. And we had one nice outfit because we didn't have a lot of money. But I got to choose one nice outfit from the Sears catalog. And I'd wear my nice outfit and I'd make my parents drive me to Eastern to audition for the All City Choir every year. And every year I sang my go-to song, America the Beautiful, which was my jam.
Mm-hmm.
Still sounds good in the shower. And every year, so I would stand up and I would sing my heart out and then I'd go home. And I'd wait, and 2 weeks later, I'd get a note that said, sorry,
mm-hmm.
not this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say for 4 or 5 years, I was just rejected.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, I was a baritone player. and just couldn't get past Blow the Man Down. Mm-hmm. That was it. And I was the only baritone player, and I was kind of a chubby kid. It was just the whole...
Baritone sax or baritone horn?
Oh, no, the horn. Uh-huh. I had to pull it to school on a sled.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, but I was like, no, I'm a singer. So I kept going, and I made it to choir in middle school, and just, it turned out I wasn't going to be a pop star. It took a long time for me to accept it, mm-hmm. but it took a long time. And it was crushing. But at the same time, I was winning awards with my art. I was painting murals for my art teacher. I was helping her run the class. I got voted most creative and most artistic, right? So all these things are happening in the art world, but my music career was flopping. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I kind of was like, all right, I'm going to give it up. Mm-hmm. But I gave it up, and it led to, like, all those failures. And I kept trying. Let me tell you, I persisted. I think I can. I was like, I was in it. But all those failures led me to art. And so I kind of always talk about my music career because I'm still a musician in my heart. Can I play an instrument? No. I've been trying to play the ukulele for 2 years, and I can't even get You Are My Sunshine. But I will sing and dance at the top of my lungs because I love it. But my career is art.
It kind of reminds me sometimes with athletes, like they'll say, Michael Jordan, one of the best basketball players ever to live, that his first love was baseball.
Yeah.
That was the sport that he grew up watching with his dad, and he actually quit the NBA in the prime of his career for a year to go play minor league baseball.
I remember that,
yeah. He was not very good at it. And sometimes you'll hear athletes basically say, like, yeah, this is how I make my money, but this is, like, where my passion truly lies in this other mm-hmm. area. Like, do you still feel any sense of that pull? Like, if you could make a Little Mermaid deal where you trade your art skills, but you get the voice and
100%.
Yeah. You 100%. Move to the music world just that quickly, you think?
I just love just letting it all out. I just love it. Mm-hmm. I love just dancing and singing, and I'd probably be a triple threat.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love it. But I mean, I love my art skills as well. But what do I do every day? Do I do art every day? At school, yes. But at home, I don't go home and do art all the time. Mm-hmm. But I go home and I will sing and dance in my kitchen every single night.
And what about your daughters? Are they? Have they blossomed as musicians? Do you think like they have an opportunity to sort of like make true the dreams that you once had for your own musical career? Or do you see yourself living vicariously through them as musicians?
No. I mean, Lucy just started playing the violin, and she tried to play the piano for a while and then just was like, nah. And Molly tried to play the guitar for a while when she had guitar lessons, but my sweet thing just couldn't sit still long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And now she wants to play the drums, which totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. And they both love to sing and write songs, and my husband plays the guitar, and he's a good guitar player. But no, I think as long as they're cool just letting it all out in the kitchen with me,
mm-hmm.
I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm. And you said, like, it never got to a point where you were writing your own songs or anything like that.
I mean, yes. I mean, I was a sixth grade girl. Like, heck yeah, I was writing songs. It was all about stuff I knew nothing about. Like, I miss you, don't you love me? Mm-hmm. You know, like, all these things that I had no clue. Mm-hmm. It's just what songs were about. Mm-hmm. So, and my daughters do it, too. Mm-hmm. They're hilarious.
What about, have you ever been the recipient of a song?
Oh, I was serenaded once. That's so funny that you said that. Eighth grade. A guy stood outside my window and sang me a song.
Wow. Was it original? Like, did he write it for you?
I don't think so, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was probably like, I don't know, not a classical song, but something like people know, but it wasn't on the radio or anything. Mm-hmm. And it was weird. I felt super awkward and I did not like it at all. Mm-hmm. I just wanted him to go away.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he was really nice, I ended up going to a dance with him.
Uh-huh. Good.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that image of you lugging your baritone horn to school on a sled, like, that's mm-hmm. got to be performance art in its own right in mm-hmm. some way, right? What statement were you making there?
Don't get in my way.
Uh-huh.
That was, and also feel sad for me. I'd usually be, like, carrying a Pop-Tart in one hand because I never could wake up early enough to eat breakfast. So I'd have a Pop-Tart in one hand. I'd have my sled in the other. Mm-hmm. And baritones are big. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're, like, 10, mm-hmm. they're huge. Mm-hmm.
You could probably fit inside the bell of the baritone. Like, you could hide in there instead of under the kitchen table.
And then when you're, like, the tubby kid, you're already kind of, like, not super comfortable in your skin. And you've got the, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just a little, like,
mm-hmm.
It was a character builder. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that.
Okay. Well, it is time for our last segment of the podcast, our Friday question of the day. And this is the opportunity for you to kick back a little bit. I've been making you share a lot about yourself, and I always give my students a chance every Friday to ask me one question. So why don't you go ahead?
Well, so I wanted to ask you a question. So in my life, it's been really important that my failures have made me who I am. So I want to know if there was a time where you failed. I'm sure there has been, but where maybe that failure inadvertently led you to success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Thinking about this, it's kind of like, how many examples do you want me to give you? I feel like I could go off and like pick anything, and I could give you a lot. Like, even I think as teachers, we fail every single day, mm-hmm. like multiple times. We plan a lesson and it doesn't go well, or like I just told you that today a couple of my hours were like a hot mess, and it wasn't even because of my students, you know, it was because of the way I designed the lesson, and we tried to do this thing that I guess I hadn't really thought through the consequences of it, and it threw off our timing and we didn't get through everything. And so I feel I fail multiple times every day in a lot of different ways, and I feel like professionally, athletically, artistically, romantically, academically, just you name it, there are a lot of instances of failure in my life. So a couple that come to mind for me, I tell my students usually the day before we take our AP language test in May about a failure that I had athletically. And if it's okay, I'm going to pass on that one for this podcast so that I can save that for my students in May.
Got it.
But one of the others that came to mind that I tell my classes about was an academic failure that I had when I was at Michigan. And I was a good student through high school, and you know, I got good grades. That was part of our family's sort of what we hung our hats on, is that mm-hmm. we work hard in school, we get good grades, we kind of earn our reputation as good students. So I had succeeded in most of my classes all the way through high school and through my first 3 years of college. I actually had this goal at Michigan to be something that's called an Angel Scholar, which is 7 consecutive terms of all A's. Oh. And like I was in the running for that late in my career if I was able to basically like get all A's for the last few terms of my time at Michigan. So like academics were really, really important to me. And I had already declared as an English major. I was taking upper level English classes at the time. It was my junior year. And I took this class called American Theater and Drama with this guy named Peter Boland, who was like this older guy who'd been tenured and he'd been at the university for a long time. Mm-hmm. And he would literally like read his lectures off of notes that he had typed on a manual typewriter in like 1954 or something like that. Like he was just a very old school kind of guy. And so I took this guy's class needing an English credit. And a lot of high school students don't realize that in college, like you get 2 or 3 grades in a term and that's mm-hmm. it. Your whole grade comes from your midterm and your final. Or for an English student, it might be, you know, our first 2 papers and a final exam. So I turned in my first paper for this American Theater and Drama class, and it was a paper about The Crucible, which we used to read at Chelsea High School, and this famous play about these Puritans, basically, yeah. and witchcraft, Salem witch trials. And I wrote this paper about like how the way people interpret words is what leads to all the problems in the play, and talked about how some people interpreted the Bible literally, and so it made them think that others were witches, whereas other people didn't see the Bible literally as the Word of God, so there was more flexibility, and just how tension came from different interpretations of uh-huh. words. So I thought it was a decent paper, and it's not like I blew it off or mailed it in. It was like up to the standard of all my other essays. So I turned it in, and a few weeks later, we got them back. And on the last page of my paper was just like red ink. Like it looked like it was a red page, basically, because the guy had written this huge paragraph about how inept I was and what a terrible writer I was. I didn't know the first thing about what I was talking about. He even actually made jokes at my expense in the comments that he wrote on the paper.
Oh my
and
God.
Basically told me, like, I don't belong at the University of Michigan and I shouldn't be an English major, and just critiqued my writing every which way. And I can still remember the last phrase in the feedback was, "So be it." And it felt like this judge's gavel coming down onto the page and telling me that I was not only a failure then, but that I was going to be a failure for the rest of my life, like in this context. And that was, for me, the first time I ever saw a failing grade on a paper. It was the first time anyone had told me with that level of directness that my work was not good and that I almost should be ashamed of what I did. And that was a really hard pill to swallow. And I can remember sitting with my girlfriend at the time, like basically on the verge of tears, like wondering what I should do next, and talking to my family members about, should I drop this class, talking to my academic advisor. And I think at the time, the easiest thing to do would have been to drop the guy's class and withdraw and just sort of assume that this was a one-off and try to find a teacher who would just be a little more receptive to what I was doing. But I was encouraged by my brother to stick it out. And he just said, you know, if this guy really is this convinced that you need to grow a lot, then maybe you can learn something from him and maybe you can benefit from this. And, you know, the worst case scenario is you fail a class and, oh well, you take a summer term class or a spring term class and you make up the credit. So I decided to stick it out with this guy's class. And the story kind of goes a little longer in my classes, but basically I committed myself to proving to this guy that I wasn't an idiot and that I was better than what he thought I was and that I belonged at Michigan and that English was a good field for me. And I did all these things to try and convince him of that, like going to his office hours every week and turning in drafts of my papers early to get feedback and basically trying to form a relationship with the guy. And the end of the story is that on my second paper, I got a B+, which was an improvement from my first essay, but still not where I was used to getting my grades at the time at Michigan. And our final exam was just a test, thank goodness, it wasn't a paper. So I got an A on the final exam, and I ended up getting my grade a few weeks later in college, like over winter break. And I looked at my test, or my grade, and I had gotten an A in the class. And that was really amazing to me because the math doesn't work out that way. I mean, I know I'm not a math major, but like an F, a B plus, and an A don't equate to an A. But basically, I think what the guy was saying is that he recognized, like, first of all, how hard of a worker I was. He saw that I was better than what he thought I was at first glance, and I had kind of won him over a little bit as a professor. And that felt really good for me to turn that failure into a success. I actually think it was an A- that I ended up with, but it kept me in the running for my academic award that I wanted. And
that's awesome.
So that was a time that, like, a failure really tested me. And I know, like, Jim Harbaugh, Michigan's football coach, talks about adversity sometimes like puts steel in your spine. Mm-hmm. Like, it really gives you an opportunity to put your feet down and say, like, no, I'm not going to let this define me. And that's one that stands out for me. So ultimately a success story, but there's definitely a lot of failure in that mm-hmm. too. So what about for you?
Oh, I failed everything. Yeah, I failed everything. And I failed classes. I failed in my music career. I failed a lot. I just am not afraid of it. I think maybe it's because it's art, right? Art is a process, and failing is a process to getting where you need to go. And you're never going to make an amazing painting the first time. You're going to screw it up 8-10 times before you get to the good one. So I look at it that way. But it was hard when I was in high school, and I did. I failed math, and I failed, because I think, you know, the hardest one for me was I had an independent study with my art teacher who I loved in high school. And I just didn't do anything in that class. I really didn't. I was independent study, so I got to sit, do my own thing. And I just didn't. And then at the end, I was like, oh my gosh, I need work. And I worked my butt off for the last 3 weeks to make some amazing pieces. And I remember going to her, and she said, I'm sorry, that's not enough. You did nothing for the first 2 months. You're failing. I'm giving you an F. And it crushed me, because here I thought she loved me, and how could she do this to me? And it took weeks until I go, wait, no, that was my fault. I did that, and I earned that F. And I think that's what made me want to just be better in her class. So I took her class again, and I got a great grade, and I proved to her that it was good. So kind of a similar thing, but it took a minute for me to realize those were my actions. So me sitting there and doing my homework from another class, like, she knew it. She let me do it, and she let me fail. And that was awesome.
Yeah, I had kind of a similar experience in high school with my band teacher. And it was the sort of thing where, like, I was the first year trumpet, and I was, like, the soloist in our jazz band. But he knew that I wasn't practicing at home. He knew, like, I had another level I could have taken it to if I just applied myself. And I got by on natural talent and didn't put in the work. So, like, similarly, I remember, like, a parent-teacher conferences where my mom came home and, like, my grade was not very good. And he just basically told her point blank, like, he hasn't worked very hard. He could be a lot better if he applied himself. And I know you said, like, I thought that she loved me. How could she do this to me? But mm-hmm. part of me thinks, like, they do that because they love us and because they know what we're capable of, and they don't like to see us settle for less than our best.
Yes. And I think that sometimes in today's world, failure is looked at is so negative, or just even getting a C on a test. I was excited when I got a C on a test, especially if it was like math. I mean, that was like winning. So when kids are just so stressed out about it, sometimes you got to fail to learn where you got to go with it. And I just don't understand how everybody's worried and their parents and what have you. It's stressful to me because my parents were like, well, did you do what you needed to do? No, you didn't. So how are you going to fix it? Mm-hmm. Right? I was hurt because I had a close relationship with her. Mm-hmm. And I think probably it's the same way with some of my students when I get upset with them for something and they're like, oh, I can't believe Nar just scolded me. But it's like, come on, mm-hmm. you can do better, mm-hmm. do better. And just come and enjoy art and just make art. Mm-hmm. And don't complain. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that you do an awesome job of finding that balance of loving people and lovingly kicking people's butts and getting the most out of people. I just can think of countless examples of students who I'm just amazed by the work that they do. And I know a lot of that is a result of the climate that you set up in your room and the culture that you set up. And I think even though I only see it when I pop in as a substitute or stop down to deliver a note to someone, I think it's really pretty clear that the students at Chelsea love you and they feel supported by you. They feel that it's safe to fail in your classroom and that you're still going to love them at the end of the day. And I think that's really an amazing gift that you give to our students at Chelsea High School. So I want to make sure, if they don't already say it, that we thank you for everything that you do for us.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Zania. That's nice of you.
And I know, like, we were talking at our last episode with Mr. Schilt about teachers that we wish we could take classes with. And I know that you know, there are a handful of teachers that I think it would be just amazing to learn, first of all, the skill that they teach, but also just to see them on a day-to-day basis, like the way that they are as teachers. And I know that for me, you're one of those teachers that one day I would like to have the opportunity to be in your class. So
Anytime.
Do you have a spot in your photography independent study?
Are you kidding me? Whenever you want, I'll make room, sir. Okay. I will kick somebody straight out of the class.
All right.
Just let me know.
All right. Good to hear. Well, that's going to do it for episode 2 of Teacher People. I want to make sure to thank my guest, Miss Laura Nar, for all the great insight on art and teaching and failure and life. And I think that we're better off for having heard what you had to say today. So thank you for your time. And thanks to everyone for listening. And remember, your teachers are people, too.